This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 945. What's going on, everyone? This is David Green, your host of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, here today with a Seeing Green episode for you. And I brought back up Rob Abasolo. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. I'm stretchy. I'm stretched.
Were you dabbing just now? Was that a dab?
I was dabbing. Yes, that's right. I think I'm doing it wrong, but I believe that's what the children are doing.
You got to do it again and then look at your armpit. You can't look where you're dabbing.
Like that, and
now look the yes, there it is.
Okay,
Dabalicious. In today's episode, we're not just going to be talking about dance moves. We're going to be talking about a lot of real estate related topics, including title fraud and how to protect yourself, how to value lower interest rates when considering a sub-2 deal, if investing in Hawaii or other high appreciating markets is still an option, how to protect yourself as a short-term rental investor, what to do when positive cash flow disappears. A lot of people going through this as interest rate and taxes are going up and rents are not keeping up. Getting into the trades, recasting loans, all that and more on another amazing fire episode of Seeing Green.
I will say, hey, the first question, a little eye-opening. You may learn something. I didn't know that this was possible. So hopefully this helps some of y'all prevent that.
All right, everybody, we're going to get to our first question. But before we do, remember, head over to biggerpockets.com/David and submit your question to be featured on this great show.
Hey, David, my name is Bobby Kemp. I'm from Long Island, New York. And my question to you is, what should I do with my single family home that's also new construction in Rotunda, West Florida? So I've had this home for about a year and a half now, and I've been renting it out almost the entire time. Cash flowing great. Except now my tenants are about to leave at the end of March, and my property manager has told me he's kind of worried that we're not going to be able to rent it right after because the rental market's not that great. And on top of this, my mortgage went up. So I'm penciling the math out and it doesn't look like I'm really going to cash flow if anything at all now. So I'm in a bit of a tough spot there. And on top of that, I'm in contract as of a couple days ago on a triplex in the St. Petersburg market. I'm going to house hack that and really make the most of that. So I really want to make sure I'm set up for success. So really, what should I do? Sell the single family home, 1031 it, or just sell it, or just keep it and really do my best to cash flow even just a little bit? Let me know your thoughts. I really appreciate everything you do at Bigger Pockets. It's helped me tremendously in my journey with real estate so far, and I look forward to hearing what you say.
Well, thank you, Bobby Kemp, and shout out to all of our Long Islanders out there. A couple of my buddies, Chris Weidman and Aljamain Sterling, are from old Long Island. And they're real estate investors as well, fans of Seeing Green. So let's break down your situation. First off, great energy. You could be a podcast mm-hmm. host if you've never thought mm-hmm. of it.
Well, hold on. Don't give him ideas.
Rob wants to keep his job. Second off, if you guys were listening to this on YouTube, you would see that Bobby has a strong resemblance to Colby Covington. We got a lot of UFC coming through in this clip. And speaking of UFC, he's trying to figure out if he should fight to keep that property or let it go and tap out. What do you think, Rob?
Well, initially, I mean, it was a bit of a roller coaster because initially he said that it was cash flowing great. And then something happened with his mortgage and now it's not cash flowing at all. My guess is that they had an escrow analysis, taxes went up, and now his mortgage went up.
Maybe insurance too.
Oh, yeah. Insurance could change a lot. So if that's the case, listen, there are a lot of ways to build wealth in real estate. Cash flow is not everything. With all that said, I prefer to make some cash flow. So if you're just breaking even on this bad boy, I would say sell a thing and get out of it into something that will hopefully produce a little bit of cash flow and then build your wealth with the other three benefits, tax pay down, appreciation and appreciation. Yeah. Do that on the next property, but try to get that fourth cash flow one in there if possible.
I like it. I was talking to my real estate team yesterday about contacting our past clients about selling their house. And one of the agents said, I just hate telling anyone to sell a house because I want them to keep it as a rental. So I don't want to go back to our past clients and ask if they want to sell their home because I want them to keep it. And I said, well, yeah, if you sell the house and you go buy a motorcycle and an RV and you take a bunch of vacations, that's dumb. But if you sell a house in an area that's so-so to buy in an area that's better, if you sell a house that's worth a little bit of money to buy a house that's going to be worth more and make more cash flow and appreciate, you just move the equity from a bad place to a better place. Mm-hmm. Don't look at it like selling a house, look at it like replanting a tree.
You're transferring.
There you go. You're transferring your wealth into a better pot for that plant to live in. It sounds like the Long Island market, or at least this specific property, ain't working out. If a property is not cash flowing, and even more so, if you can't find a tenant, get out of Dodge. That is not a good scenario. The one Achilles heel for all real estate investing is it depends on having tenants.
Yeah. He said that his property manager is a little nervous that he's not going to be able to rent it. I mean, if you're or rent it for the same amount. So if your property manager is feeling that way, well, how much do you like them? Are they experienced? Maybe find a new property manager and confirm that this is true. I would hate for you to sell it without doing a little bit of due diligence. But if it seems correct, then yeah, get it. Yeah, move the I like that analogy. Move the flower pot, move the flower planting stuff into a bigger pot, David. I get it.
Bobby also mentioned in our notes here that this property is actually furnished and you don't want to lose all that furniture because the stuff's freaking expensive. No one knows better than Rob, buy nice, not thrice, Abba Solo. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you don't want to waste furniture. You're probably not going to get a lot for it in a traditional sale. So a couple things we could do with that. Maybe, Bobby, before you sell, look if you could rent this thing out as a medium or a short-term rental. You never know. Is there a strong market out there for a furnished property? And Rob, where would you recommend he go? Price Labs, AirDNA, what's your advice?
I typically use AirDNA. Just make sure that you are sifting through the bad comps and the good comps. There's a whole strategy around this, but you just want to find comps that are very comparable to yours, right? Same bed, bath, same square footage, same location-ish, same amenities. And that's how you can get a gauge of how much you could possibly make. But typically AirDNA is the one that I use.
Or you could talk to a property manager that manages short-term rentals and get a feel from a more experienced host in that realm. But let's say that that doesn't work. The next thing I would do is I would go into forums like Facebook forums or online communities in the Long Island area for people that are short-term rental and midterm rental operators. And I would see if anyone there wants to buy furniture, because you're probably going to sell it to them easier and for more money than if you just sell it along with the house, if you end up selling that thing. The last place I would go is Facebook Marketplace. I'd advertise some of that furniture for sale. I'd sell it there, but you don't want to just be like, oh, I'll give it to the sellers, because the sellers are going to throw in a couple grand maybe if they even want that furniture. They might actually tell you that you need to get rid of it because they have their own furniture. It's a very inefficient way to capitalize there.
Yep. Good point. It's honestly, yeah. I mean, midterm rentals, short-term rentals could be the exit strategy that helps, but a lot more management. And then also, just a little word to the wise here, just because a short-term rental grosses from a revenue standpoint a lot more than a long-term rental, it doesn't mean that it'll make more money, because to run it as a long-term rental might cost you, now let's say $1,500 a month. And then you have operational expenses with midterm rentals and short-term rentals that could cost you $3,500 or $4,000 a month to run as a business, and you have to make more than that. You know, there's some complexities there. So just make sure you're running your numbers and that it's actually worth it to short-term rent it, because you don't want to just take a look at that gross revenue at face value. You want to make sure it's still going to be profitable. There's a fine line there, though.
All right. There you go, Bobby. Thank you for your message, man. Best of luck to you. Love the energy. Love that you're making it happen, and good luck on that triplex out there in St. Petersburg. All right, we're going to be back after a quick break, and we're going to get into some advice for protecting yourself from title fraud, so stick around.
Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them, and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from Connect Invest. Connect Invest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short Notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP. Whenever I used to travel, I would get that creeping feeling, did I lock my back door? How do I know my property is going to be safe while I'm away? But not anymore, thanks to SimpliSafe Home Security. I'm about to go on a three-week trip to Copenhagen, but am I tripping about my trip? Nope. With award-winning security and peace of mind from SimpliSafe, I don't need to worry. SimpliSafe is a super amazing alarm system that I actually installed in my house myself personally in less than 30 minutes. And there's so much peace of mind knowing that there's something in place to protect my homes, my goods, and my John Mayer shrine. SimpliSafe systems have high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods, indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch night and day, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. Plus, SimpliSafe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera. Hey, bud, get out of here. It's like that, but it's a lot better, I imagine. And if you buy the system and you don't love it, you can get a full refund with SimpliSafe's 60-day money-back guarantee. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
All right, welcome back. We're talking title fraud. This question comes from Brian, and he says, I've got 5 rentals across 4 states, and I own most of them completely outright, so no loan.
Yeah.
I'm looking for advice on how to protect myself from title fraud, as this is one of my biggest fears. This title theft stuff is coming up a lot, hearing more and more about it.
Yeah.
When I read the question, my first thought was, well, if you don't have a lot of equity, this is something that's not likely to happen. However, well, Brian here's got himself a buttload. That's a technical term.
Yeah, it is.
Of equity. Uh-huh. So I believe his fears are founded here.
Yeah, I got a question. What's the problem? Like, I didn't know, is you owning a house outright open you up to more title fraud?
Yeah, basically, if someone's going to steal title to your home, okay, you got a $1 million home, but you owe $950,000 on it. What are they going to do with a $1 million home that only has $50,000 of equity?
Okay.
They're going to have a hard time selling it to anybody else. It's not really that valuable to them, and they don't know how to operate the thing. So nobody steals those houses. What they look for is a $300,000 house that's been completely paid off.
Okay.
Because now they could go sell it to somebody else for $100,000 who thinks that they just got a great deal. And the fraudster just made themselves a quick $100K.
This is very educational for me. Run me through a scenario where this might happen. So I have a house, it's paid off, it's worth $300,000. Some fraudster can come in and finagle some documents to make it look like, or forge my name and then basically steal my house title from me.
I don't know the exact process, but what it would involve would be, and that's because I'm not a criminal.
You wearing a wire? You got to tell me if you're wearing a wire.
That's funny. Are you a cop? You got to tell me if you're a cop.
Yeah, you got to tell me.
So what you would do is you would forge documents, just like you said, that show you created a doc, like an LLC, and that person owns the property, and they are going to be transferring the title from their own name or their entity into yours. You would then take that to a notary, which you could pay. I mean, it's not like notaries work for the CAA. I guess you could still buy someone off in the CAA. They're not that hard to buy off, so I'm getting at.
I've seen Pain and Gain.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. If you and I were in that movie, who would be Pain and who would be Gain?
I think you would be Dwayne Johnson and I'd be the other guy.
Mark Wahlberg.
I'd be Mark Wahlberg? Hey, say hello to your mother for me.
Look how happy Rob just got. First time you've ever been compared this is to Mark
first
Wahlberg.
Time. Marco Wahlberg, actually, is what we...
Marco Wahlbergo. All right.
Wahlbergo. Oh, no, Wahlhamburguesa.
That means hamburger in Spanish for anyone who's trying to put the pieces together. Very nice.
And we're back.
So you would just go to a notary and you would say, hey there, I'm buying this house. I need you to notarize these documents. Here's a little $5,000 to grease the wheels for you. They would say, oh, I happen to have an ID from Rob Abasolo here saying that I want to sell my house to David Green. And now I take that to the county assessor's website and I say, I've got documents here showing there's a grant deed. This property has been transferred from Rob to David, and now they record it as belonging to David, and there's nothing you can do. You could go to the tax assessor's office and you could say, this was stolen from me, I never agreed to it, and they're going to say, I don't care. If it's recorded as his, it's a civil matter, take it up with the judge. And during that period of time, you've lost access to the house. And then what I can do is I can go sell it to somebody else. Now, I can't sell anybody else this house if it's got a lien on it for a lot of money. Because when I go to transfer the title from me to them, the lender's going to get notified and they're going to ask me paid off. So if I try to sell them the house at a discount of $900,000 when it's a $1 million house, but there's a note on it for $950,000, there's no money in it for me. So that's why they target houses that have a lot of equity, particularly that's been paid off.
Wow. Okay. That's super interesting. I guess I would say, can you get title insurance after? I mean, title insurance is just
protects buyers, like
pre-purchase.
Yeah, that's exactly. The problem is if someone's fraudulently stealing your properties, you are the seller in that situation. So the title insurance would be protecting the person who's stealing the properties from you. So that's like putting a bulletproof vest on the bad guy. That's not helping us here. So for anybody else that's worried about this, check out episode 808, where we interviewed Sheila and Teresa, who have a company, Consortia, that's a blockchain company that's designed to help with property details and ownership. It was kind of like Carfax for a home. You might be able to protect yourself with some of the offerings they have. And then look for these warning signs. This will alert you to the fact somebody might have stolen title to your property and you don't know it. You stop receiving water bills or property tax assessments, because if the title changes from you to somebody else, those bills are going to go to that person when the county tax assessor's office has their mailing address listed instead of yours. The utility bills on a vacant property rise suddenly, or you find other people living there. You stop receiving your tenant's rent payments and learn that they've been making the payments to another person in location. That should alert anybody if that happens. But if you're using a property manager, they might not have understood that you didn't sell the property. You receive payment books or other information from a lender with whom you haven't done business. So if you get letters in the mail from a lender and you never did business with them, that's a sign that something might have gone on. Or you find yourself in default on a loan or are notified of foreclosure proceedings through a notice of default. Any of these things might, what's up this might indicate title fraud. You want to call your county tax assessor's office immediately and say, hey, I own this property. Can you make sure that it is still in my name? Now, if it's not in your name, they're going to have the name of the person who recorded it under their name. And now you can start your gumshoe work of hiring a private eye, a detective, or doing your own work to figure out who that person is and how they took title. Now, the good news for you is because most states require someone to have valid ID, or in fact, all states that I know of, to buy a property, they would have had to make up a fake ID and somehow pulled the wool over people's eyes to not use their own identity. So most of the time when this happens, you could find out who the person is that did it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some paper trail and I guess corrective action that could be taken, but it sounds very expensive. And I'm really glad we answered. We talked about this question, but I think it's important because I bet you there's a lot of people at home listening right now that were just like, wait a minute, this can happen.
Yeah.
And I'm one of them.
Yeah, it actually can happen. It happened to me. It didn't happen the same way, but it did happen to me. And it was a huge, huge, huge problem for me that triggered a domino rally of a bunch of other things that went wrong. So especially if you're a prominent investor like we are, where people know who we are and we can become targets, it's even more easily to happen. And if you own properties that are paid off or have a lot of equity, you're basically running around with a big target on your back.
Yeah, that's right. Remind me, you mentioned it the other day. What was your mother's maiden name again?
So at this part of the show, we like to read some comments from previous YouTube posts, as well as comments people left when they left us a review on their podcast app. Our first comment comes from Brady Morgan, and he says, David, you said it. Learn the trades. I left the corporate world about 5 years ago early in my real estate investing journey from the first bird deal that I did, and I learned that construction is the biggest margin on real estate, and I needed to know more about it. I started working as a framing carpenter, joined my local planning and zoning board as a volunteer, and then became a building inspector for my town. Today, I have my own construction company, building rentals and specs. Investing in new construction homes becomes so much easier when you don't have to pay someone the 20% general contractor fee. Honestly, learning the trades and construction has been more valuable than my MBA degree. Plus, I enjoy it so much more than sitting at a computer all day in a windowless office crunching data. That is a cool, I love this story. In fact, we need to get Brady Morgan on the podcast and talk to old Brady about how he pulled this off, because I think this is a great strategy for how you can make deals work in a tough environment. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, doing the whole, you know, construction thing, whether you're doing it yourself, you know, DIY or professionally, I'm always an advocate for trying to build stuff at cost. And if you're doing that, I mean, I think new construction is one of the best ways to build wealth, because you're getting amazing assets at cost to you. I think it's as long as you're willing to suffer through the construction process and all that stuff, but super sound. I love doing it. I'm doing more new construction this year. Next comment. This is from -Zub0 8885. He says, the recast explanation was a little light, Most lenders now will allow you to do it purely because it will typically free up lower interest rate capital that they wouldn't see and now can relend at a higher rate. Inflation has some benefits, I suppose. Basically, a recast is tied to a reduction of principal, and then the payment is reduced as the remaining balance is reamortized over the remaining term. If you, as a borrower, don't mind the opportunity cost of not investing the principal reduced amount, assuming it's a lower rate, then the lender slash borrower, it is a win-win scenario. Borrower gets a lower payment at same interest rate to pay less interest over time, and lender will get to reinvest those funds in another borrower at a higher rate. Did you keep up with all that?
It was a nice summation of the recast dilemma that we were talking about. So yeah, when rates go up, but you have a lower interest rate, lenders are more likely to let you pay them back quicker because they let you borrow money at 3%. You're paying it back. They can lend it at a higher rate. That also puts them in a position where they are incentivized to now call notes that are due. If you assume a loan from someone else at 3% or 4% and rates go up to 8, 9, 10%, lenders are like, hey, if I could get that money back from you, I can lend it out at three times the rate that I let somebody borrow it at.
Sure.
It increases the odds that that could happen. And it decreases the odds that could happen, obviously, when rates go low. But when rates go low, people refinance. They're not going to hold on to assume mortgages at 9%. So that is a great point. And if you're having trouble finding loans, and you're sitting at a high interest rate and you're just trying to find a way to get more of a return cash flow wise, hey, putting $100,000 or $50,000 towards your principal balance and decreasing it, especially if you're at an 8, 9, 10% interest rate, is a way to increase your cash flow without buying more real estate.
Yeah, I love it. One little note here from Island Derek. He says, recasting your mortgage, they typically require a 30 to 50% equity before they can recast. I don't know if that's you. I've never looked into it that much, but something to keep in mind, I suppose, for some mortgage companies.
Thank you, Rob. Great job there. I'm glad I brought you along. We love you guys. Yeah. We appreciate your engagement. Please continue to like, comment, and subscribe on YouTube. And if you're listening to this in a podcast app, take some time to follow the show so you get notified every time Seeing Green comes out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And then after that, we're going to get into advice for investing in Hawaii, if it's still possible, and how to do it.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Whenever I used to travel, I would get that creeping feeling, did I lock my back door? How do I know my property is going to be safe while I'm away? But not anymore, thanks to Simply Safe Home Security. I'm about to go on a 3-week trip to Copenhagen, but am I tripping about my trip? Nope. With award-winning security and peace of mind from Simply Safe, I don't need to worry. Simply Safe is a super amazing alarm system that I actually installed in my house myself personally in less than 30 minutes. And there's so much peace of mind knowing that there's something in place to protect my homes, my goods, and my John Mayer shrine. Simply Safe systems have high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods, indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch night and day, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. Plus, Simply Safe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera. Hey, bud, get out of here. It's like that, but it's a lot better, I imagine. And if you buy the system and you don't love it, you can get a full refund with Simply Safe's 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like Simply Safe. We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
Welcome back. We're going to close out today's show with one final question. This comes from G. Pettit in Florida. David, what's your opinion on investing in Hawaii? Where do you invest there and what strategies work on what islands? You have mentioned frequently having different property types there, but is it worthwhile market over the long term? Many properties that I see are scummy leaseholds, condos that don't seem to appreciate due to their vast quantities and overpriced shacks. Is the Hawaiian dream dead? And what strategies actually work on the island from your experience? Is it worth it to burn cash on a house hack just to live in the area and get high appreciation? Are condos worthwhile with their fees and lack of control or appreciation? And can Airbnbs actually make money past all the regulation? Rob, I'm going to let you start with this one.
Well, this is very much a like, hey, do you have 5 minutes to chat? And then it's like 80 questions and like it turns into an hour. There are a lot of questions to unpack here. So what is your opinion on investing in Hawaii? To be honest, I don't know if maybe I'm just, I don't know, I think too much about it, but I haven't really put a lot of thought into it because I hear, you know, the different backlash and people not being super happy with, yeah, I don't know, real estate being snatched up. I got to be careful about how I word that because I know you own real estate there, but I like the idea, but I don't know. I just don't really, I do think about it a little bit, I guess. I think about that. I'm like, well, I don't really ever want to, it's already hard enough to be a real estate investor in the United States where everyone on TikTok hates you. But if I were to talk about how I invested in Hawaii, I don't even want to know what those TikTok comments would say. So I guess I haven't really thought about it. I could have said that.
Yeah. Thank you for answering like a true politician with a lot of words and very little substance in anything.
I'm scared. Okay. I'm scared.
All right. So I own properties in Maui. They are short-term rentals. I'm trying to get to all the questions that was asked of me here. They are in a form of an HOA in Hawaii. I guess they would be technically classified as condos. They're not leaseholds. So these scummy leaseholds that G. Pettit is describing is when, how would I describe this? Like basically instead of owning the land, you own the building that's on the land and you are leasing the land from the owner, which is usually a Hawaiian native. So they didn't want to sell all their land to people coming in that didn't live there. So they said, look, I'm not going to sell the land, but I'll let you lease it from me for 100 years. And at the end of that 100-year term or whatever it is, we'll have to renegotiate another lease on this land. Otherwise, I get to keep all the improvements that you made on the property, which can obviously be scary because if you go build yourself a nice waterfront villa and the leaseholder says, hey, I don't want to renew the lease or here's my real expensive lease terms, they'd be able to take your property. The other way of owning property is called fee simple, which means that you own it yourself, which is how most of us are used to owning property. As far as should somebody do it or not, should they buy in Hawaii? I'm going to just relate this to every appreciation market. in the golden era of real estate, where we had low rates, lots of inflation, lots of opportunities to buy real estate before it became easy to do because software was created and podcasts were created and strategies were shared, you could get cash flow and appreciation in the same market. It's getting to the point where I'm starting to see in my mind a delineation between these two strategies. You've got cash flow markets, which tend to be low priced homes, closer to 1% rule, where you can get cash flow. You're probably not going to get a lot of appreciation. And then you've got appreciation markets that are almost the opposite. You're going to get appreciation, but you're probably not going to cash flow. Okay. In order to invest in these appreciation markets without losing money every month, you have to put a very sizable down payment down. So what's starting to happen is that if you want to get into the appreciation markets where you will make more money long term, you have to have more money to play. So what happens is instead of buying $1 million place and putting $200,000 down, you buy $1 million place and you put $500,000 down. And then that $1 million place becomes worth 1.2. So you made $200,000 on your $500,000 investment, which is a 40% return on your money, but it did not come as a cash on cash return. It came as a cash on equity return. Let's call it that.
Like okay. Your ROI, basically, right? Yes. Oh, yeah, your ROE.
Yeah, a return on investment has been synonymous with cash on cash return, but it really shouldn't be.
No.
There's different ways that you get an investment. That's kind of the topic of the book that I'm writing. So if you don't have a really big down payment, you really shouldn't be investing in a market like Hawaii or like Malibu or like Miami, some of these places that are going to be more expensive. Because you're not going to cash flow. And if you're not in a financially strong position through a lot of money or through the ability to weather a lot of not cash flow, you shouldn't be playing there. You're going to have to go to these cash flow markets that aren't going to get appreciation and just go slower. You're going to slowly build equity. You're going to slowly 1031 into something better. You're going to learn the principles of real estate investing. You're going to take a couple years to get it down. And then maybe you 1031 into a market like Hawaii. And I guess that's the way that I'm starting to notice investors have two different routes that they can take. Well, we never had to have this conversation before. It was, do I want a lot of cash flow in a cheaper market or a little bit of cash flow in an appreciation market? And I think that the scales have kind of tipped away from that. What do you think?
Yeah, interest rates have made it harder to, have made everything a little bit tougher. I want to unpack something you said, which is the cash on cash versus ROI, because some people might be like, whoa, what? I totally get this. This cash on cash, you're right, has been synonymous with that. So basically, cash on cash is how hard your money works for you in 1 year time. So if you invest $100,000 into a property and the profit after all of your expenses is $15,000, you would divide that $15,000 by the $100,000 investment, and that would be a 15% cash on cash return. That is the golden metric in a lot of different real estate investments, for sure in Airbnb too. Whereas you get into the ROI side of things, and I think ROI is a breakdown of cash on cash, the tax benefits that you got from deductions, appreciation. When you factor all four of those in, that's what gets you your IRR or your rate of return.
Which is another metric for measuring return on investment.
Are you agreed with that definition?
And that's what literally the next book that I'm writing is about. Okay. Is ROI should not be synonymous with cash on cash return. They're not the same thing. There's 10 ways you make money in real estate, and I have them divided into the four categories you said, Rob: cash flow, appreciation, tax savings, which is depreciation. That's why you keep getting mixed up, as well as loan pay down. Mm-hmm. So you can make money in real estate in all of these ways, but that doesn't mean that they're all equally good for everybody. If you're someone who's got a $3 million net worth, you can go invest in Hawaii and delay gratification and make your money through equity, which is energy stored in the property. But if you're someone who's living paycheck to paycheck, you don't really have that luxury. You're going to have to go into somewhere that's lower risk, where you actually get cash flow every single month, and you're going to make your money through energy you put in the bank, which would be the cash. And we've never needed in the past to differentiate between these two things. What we always said was invest for cash flow and hopefully appreciation will happen. So the question was, is the Hawaiian dream dead? It probably is not dead, but it is out of reach for the new investor who's like, I want to buy my first house. I want to do it in Maui. No, you don't. That's like, I'm going to start going back to the gym and get in shape. I should go to CrossFit. Absolutely not. You will die. Don't do that. Start taking a walk, measure your steps, go to a gym, work out at a pace that you can handle, and earn the way to get into CrossFit. I think investors should look at it the same way with these appreciation markets.
Final little thing on the question he ended with, which is, can Airbnbs actually make money past all the regulation, and what locations do you invest in? I do want to say one little thing. Going back to my non-answer earlier about genuinely considering what the Hawaiian population kind of their feedback about investors coming in and snapping up property. There is a housing shortage in Hawaii, and typically in cities like LA, New York, San Francisco, and then places like Hawaii where there are such extreme housing shortages, the regulations typically follow suit. And so for that reason, I'm also uninterested in investing in Airbnbs out in Hawaii, because I don't know if I can trust that regulation will keep me as an Airbnb investor, you know, keep my interest at play. I think it's, you know, they're not going to watch out for us, which is, you know, I don't have an issue necessarily with that, but that is,
I mean, that happened to me in Maui. Yeah. I bought properties. Luckily, I bought in a resort zone. A lot of people were not buying in resort zones, and they all had the hammer come down on them.
Yeah.
Our producer here put ordinance 22-7, which was passed in October of 2022, basically spelled out that Hawaiians can fine people for operating short-term rentals if it's not in a resort zone. And I believe it's like $10,000 a day. And they actually have department officials that proactively go look for these. They send someone in a car. They take pictures of your guests checking in and out with their suitcases. They hit you with a $10,000 fine. So they're not joking around. And it's not just Hawaii. I'm seeing this everywhere. And they only do it when people apply for a short-term rental permit. So it's not like it's a bad strategy, but you have more due diligence going into this than people ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody, we hope you enjoyed today's show. Rob and I sure did. So if you like this stuff, please make sure that you subscribe to this podcast. Rob, anything you want to say before we go?
No, I liked all of these. Were all thinkers. Usually we have a couple softballs, but I feel like we really had to talk through every single one of these questions.
Absolutely. This was a tough show. Thanks for being here with me to take some of the pressure off. Rob, if you want to know more about Rob or I, our info is in the show notes. So go check that out and keep an eye out for the next episode of Seeing Green. This is David Green for Rob Aristotle Abasolo. Signing off.
What's the connection on that one?
You're a thinker.
Oh, I like it. Thank you. That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me. There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.